When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, I'm Alyssa.
I'm Jam.
And I'm a chemist.
And I'm not.
And welcome to Chemistry for Your Life,
the podcast that helps you understand the chemistry of your everyday life.
And today is part two in the dairy series.
That's
in
right.
The dairy fat series, really.
Okay, nice.
Okay, but before we start, I have to confess my sins and make an apology.
Okay.
Okay, so last week.
I forgive you.
Thanks. That's so sweet. Before I even admit it. So last week, Clarissa came and asked us about the butter.
Oh, yes.
And then I was pretty sure our other friend, Caibe, who's a Brazilian, right? He's from Brazil, biochemist?
Believe so.
He's a biochemist. Uh-huh. And I thought he had asked about whipped cream, so I went back to look at his question about whipped cream. And actually, he had asked word for word the exact same question that Clarissa had asked.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
So she asked milk and he specified cream.
Right.
Which is probably why I got confused.
Right.
So then I went to our Gmail to see, like, did somebody else ask about whipping cream? So I typed in cream.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, in an email from November of 2021, Kaiba had already asked us about the butter situation.
Dang. Okay.
So not only did I ignore that request, it got lost to the emails of time, but also when someone else made it the same week that he remade it, I gave them all the credit and totally forgot.
Yeah, dang it.
So I'm sorry. I messaged him personally and apologized.
Nice. I saw a response come in. I was like, I don't know what that's about, but now it makes sense.
Now you know.
Also, I love the phrase, the emails of time, has come out of this scenario. There's at least one silver lining, or two. One, we got the episode happened anyway.
Yes.
Even though it was a little bit later,
and
we didn't give him credit too, so we're doing that now. But then second, the emails of time.
Emails of time.
Yep.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
It just came out of nowhere.
It's sort of like the sands of time.
Or the
like,
annals of time.
This idea of like things building up and covering up over history. Like,
yeah.
The fossils get covered.
I mean, November of 2021 was a long time ago.
Oh, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even have a PhD then.
Me neither.
You neither.
I still don't, but you know.
Okay, so then the second part of that is I'm pretty sure that someone did ask me about whipped cream.
Okay.
Other than Caiba. And I don't know who that person is. So if that's you, and you're like, it was me. I was a question asker. Please let me know. Reach out. I searched our email, couldn't find anything. I wish we could search Instagram inboxes. I don't know why that's a feature that doesn't exist, but it really should be. But it's not. So if that's you, let me know in the future.
So today is whipped cream? That you said?
Today is whipped cream. We're going to answer the question that I thought that he asked that maybe someone else asked.
Okay.
Okay. So are you ready for it?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, so just as a reminder that we know that in whole milk that comes directly from the cow, there's water, protein, fat, vitamins, minerals, and sugar.
Uh-huh.
And the sugar is lactose.
Right.
Some people aren't intolerant of that. And then when it goes to, you know, a dairy processing plant, it gets pasteurized and separated out. And the higher fat content is cream.
Okay.
And we talked about in butter how there's, well, I guess we talked about to make butter in the cream layer that has a higher percent of fat in it. These individual fat globules, when they're manually stirred, will sort of break open and allow each other to find each other and interconnect and make a solid butter.
Yeah.
So whipped cream is basically butter that hasn't fully buttered yet.
Okay.
It's like a transient state between butter and cream.
Huh. Interesting.
What do you know about whipped cream? Do you make it? Do you think about it ever?
I mean, I guess I have made it before. And I've used whipping cream and stuff, and sometimes I've had to actually whip it, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I kind of just thought it was the, like, creating little bubbles of air.
Right.
That was the secret. And I didn't really, I guess I probably would have guessed that there's not much other stuff changing.
There's definitely little bubbles of air in it. That's true. But there's little bubbles in air in lots of different water or lots of different liquids. So right. What do you think it is about the whipping cream that makes it not just be bubbles dissolved in the liquid?
Maybe there's more of them, and also the substance is such where it can like handle the bubbles and keep them. Like, obviously, water on its own can have bubbles in it, but they're kind of thin and it might not support a structure of bubbles. But something about whipped cream being different, probably the fat, allows, if you create a bunch of bubbles, that it can actually handle them and have the bubble structure around it or something without just collapsing.
That's really close. I mean, you got most of the ideas. Good job.
What I guess what off the cuff I can't figure out is, like, you know, I would think fat, oils, that kind of stuff wouldn't inherently be better at that. Especially thinking, like, you think of that as heavier, you know? I mean, I think most of us would.
Yeah.
Just assume it's sort of heavier. So then you might think, okay, the chemical level, why wouldn't water be great at that? You know?
That's a good question. I think the reason water isn't great at that is because it can't make an interlinked network.
Interlinked.
So that's what we're going to get into today. So that's a good question. That was a good critical thinking to guess what was happening. Good job. Whenever my students are like, oh, I just totally BS that, I'm like, did you BS that? Or did you use the information you already have to draw a conclusion that's somewhat logical?
Right, right.
And that is just critical thinking.
Right. Which some of us might use that term kind of loosely, like, but taking an educated guess or taking a guess with the knowledge I have is probably, more accurate. But
yeah, taking a guess with knowledge you have is not just BSing. It's making an educated guess. It's using critical thinking skills. So that's what you just did. Good job.
Nice. Okay.
Okay. So whipped cream is a foam. And foams are essentially just dispersions of gas in liquid.
Okay.
It's usually prepared using a foaming agent. That's a dispersion of gas in a liquid prepared using a foaming agent is a direct quote from one of our sources. And in this case, it is air that's dispersed among the contents of the cream, right? Just like you said. But there is something that gives it a structure. And initially, I found this really cool paper from 1986 that it was kind of spicy. It was like, okay, so they took a scanning electron microscope to look at the structure of the cream as it was forming. So like the literal title of the paper is the development of, no, that's a different one. It's, oh, sorry, I lost it. The development of structure in whipped cream.
Okay.
So it literally talks about how does the structure get there, which is a gold mine. I was so excited to find it. It's kind of an older paper, but in the paper, he talked about, it kind of seemed like he was throwing a little bit of shade. Like, well, up till now, we've looked at the final structure, and that's great, but it doesn't really tell us how things happen. And we're just kind of making assumptions, which is such a niche high drama situation.
Yeah.
Like in that academic community, I'm betting when that came out, people were kind of mad about it. Maybe. That's what I like to imagine.
Uh-huh.
They're like, we thought we knew. We were just doing the best we had with what we had, whatever. And he's like, mwahaha, I got it. That was my imagination. It's like a high level of niche drama.
Uh-huh.
Just a little bit of academic spice, you know. But essentially he would freeze a sample and look at it under a scanning electron microscope after like 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, 40 seconds, 50 seconds of whipping cream.
Uh-huh.
And what he actually found is, you know, there's already air dispersed in milk.
Right.
And so what makes it different, or in cream, what makes this different is, first, it seems like the air bubbles are actually stabilized with the protein in milk.
Okay.
So they kind of get protein coming around the outside of the air bubbles. And you remember we talked about how the protein in milk is kind of cool?
Yes.
It's like acts as what they call an emulsifying agent, which allows for the emulsion to form, like allows the mixing of oil and water.
Right, right.
And so in this case, it seemed like that protein forms at the interface between the air and the water, or the protein like takes up a spot at the interface between the air and the water, or the cream content. And for some reason, that is the key step to then allow the fat to come and interact at the interface between the air bubble, this water air membrane type of thing, and surround it.
Okay.
And it's the same thing that happens in butter, where these individual flat fat globules initially, in the first 10 to 20 seconds, they're minding their own business still. And the air bubbles are starting to, you know, be surrounded by proteins. And then the fat is able to, as it starts to break open from those globules and interact with each other, it starts to surround the air bubbles with the protein acting almost as a bridge and then interlinking. So it's forming those, I think it's intermolecular forces, but it could be, one source did say cross-linking, which would indicate maybe an actual bonding, but I think it's more intermolecular forces to kind of make a network. And so it reminded me of the visual I have in my head is almost like, you know, when people zoom in on your brain and they have all the like little neurons connected and it's like this whole big network. Mm-hmm. Or like, it looks like a bunch of string all over the place, yes. You know, things like that.
Yeah.
I imagine it looking like that. But actually in this paper, there are pictures of it developing, which is so cool.
Huh.
From the scanning electron microscope. But essentially, you can envision an air bubble with a protein film around it. And then around that, a fat layer with tendrils, you know, coming out and connecting to other fat layers that are surrounding other air bubbles.
Uh-huh.
So they all start to interconnect and form somewhat of a structure.
Interesting.
So it is very much like the first stage in what's going to happen to the butter.
Right, right.
Because the butter forms that interlocking network, but in butter, a lot of the air bubbles are collapsed and the fat molecules are closer together.
Right, right.
So it is very similar to butter, but it just isn't butter yet.
Yeah. Interesting. I guess here's a question I have off the top of my head that maybe is an obvious answer, but is this, so the fact that the protein allows the water and the fat oil to like interact,
mm-hmm.
is that basically the same reason then that a network of bubbles can form in soap, where soap can interact with, it's not a protein, but it can interact with both water and oil and create some structure that can hold bubbles? Or I guess you don't need the oil though.
You're asking
to create soap. You just need water and soap.
You're asking about the bubbles and soap, like bubble bath, like correct. Where all those bubbles come from.
Correct.
That's a really good question.
Those are the two bubbliest things I know of, you know? And I've been able to, like, when I clean my milk frother thing, I can put some water and some soap in it and just run it on no heat. And it just, like, mixes around and makes this really fine.
That's tasty. Satisfying.
It looks tasty, but it is soap, so I'm not going to drink it.
So it almost looks like whipped cream, but it's soap.
Yes.
Wow. I never thought about what makes the bubbles, like what in soap allows you to have that, like contain the bubbles, basically. Mm-hmm. Wow. Thank you for asking that.
Maybe we can put it in a Q&R.
Maybe so, or maybe we can make a whole episode about it.
There we go.
Yeah, because what makes those suds? What makes sudsiness? Surely that's somebody studied that.
Yeah, surely.
There's a lot of different types of chemistry, like surface chemistry. You know, I'm saying, oh, there's like these air bubbles and they're surrounded by protein. There are people who study the interface between the air and the liquid that really creates the bubble.
Mm.
But I didn't feel like that was super valuable for us to get into today. That was a really good question.
I thought it was going to be like more on topic than it was. Or as I started asking it, I started realizing like, oh, but you don't have to have oil present. So it's not like it's like the same thing.
Yeah.
Just changing out the milk protein for soap molecule. Suddenly I realized it wasn't quite the same.
I mean, I do think that there's something in the soap that does capture air because I have done an experiment called elephant's toothpaste. You've done it too.
Yes.
And it basically is a rapid release of air that gets trapped kind of in the soap, and that then that makes it foam up like that, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm assuming that the principles underlying that are very similar. It's like the air, very small air bubbles are suspended in this liquid. But I guess I don't, it's like I can't in my mind. A lot of times what I do to answer questions is I zoom in to the molecular level and I'm having a hard time zooming into the molecular level and thinking about what is happening in soapy bubbles.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about it more.
Sweet.
That's a good question. I think that's a good episode for another day. So let me find my place here where we are.
Sorry.
That's okay. No, that was really good. Okay. So I will say the protein part happens for the first 20 to 30 seconds. And then the proteins start to act as a bridge that allows the fat globules to start to connect and interact with the air bubbles.
Okay.
So they facilitate the linking of the air bubbles together, essentially via fat. You're just like locking these air bubbles into place with fat or into near each other. And one source phrased it, I think they described it well. It's air cells surrounded by a film containing fat droplets that are stabilized by a film of protein. And there's some clumping of the flat fat globules around the air cell of the foam. And the fat is partially solidified, which prevents it from collapsing.
Okay.
So basically, you have an air bubble. It's surrounded by fat, but also there's some protein that helps the fat be where it is.
Uh-huh.
And then the fat starts to connect with each other.
Uh-huh.
They start to clump. And then that fat that has started to become solidified because of the clumping helps it keep its shape.
Okay.
So essentially, the fat is the stabilizing agent in the air dispersed in the cream.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
That makes sense.
So that's basically what whipped cream is. It's just a foam with air bubbles that are able to interact with proteins and then interact with fat using intermolecular forces. And then they are stabilized and that's whipped cream.
Dang. Wow.
But I will say the reliance on fat for the structure is why you can't let whipped cream get too hot.
Right.
Because the fat will melt.
Yeah.
And, you know, go to its liquid state, one. And then two, the fat being relied on for the structure means that if you use colder things, it will let the molecules move around less. And so they will be more solid when they're in their whipped form. So if you use like a cold bowl and a cold beater or a cold whisk, that can help the interlinking process happen faster, which is counterintuitive because normally when we want molecules to interact with each other more, we put heat in to move around more. We're manually moving it around. And then the cold is making the fat go from being liquidy to being solid.
Mm.
It's almost like you're almost freezing the fat. So that's why it helps it solidify. It doesn't really help the chemical processes as much as the physical going from a liquid to a solid.
Right, right.
And so that's it. I thought that was interesting.
I've also heard something similar in the coffee world talking about sort of frothing milk, which wouldn't be making whipped cream, but is some of the same things at play, that the heat thing makes a big difference. And you gotta be really careful not to go too hot when you're trying to steam milk and froth it and stuff like that. There's kind of a sweet spot. Like obviously for a hot drink, you want it to be warm, but you just can't go too warm or it really changes things. And you can't get a good like froth and stuff. So that kind of connects to something from a, you know, different part of my brain.
Yeah. Well, and one of our listeners, I think her name is Lynn, wrote in also about being a coffee lover and asking questions about why you have to use what you use when you texturize milk, but I don't remember what it was. So I was like, oh, that would be really good for our dairy series. But then, you know.
Yeah.
And I haven't researched it anymore.
I've also heard that if you get too hot, they can affect the proteins too.
Denature it. And I think that's curdling, right?
Oh, yeah, maybe so.
I think denatured proteins is curdled milk. And
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwood1, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwood1 now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwood1.
Well, I think you can boil milk at under the proteins without it curdling, but it wouldn't be able to be frothed.
So there's another thing that we can add is what's the curdle?
Yeah.
Because sometimes I will say like, oh, my whipped cream is curdling, but that's when it like looks like it's about to be butter.
Right.
So maybe curdle is a specific thing where proteins get denatured and then clump back together in a different way.
Right.
Who knows? Look at all these questions coming up today.
So many things about milk and cream and whipped cream.
So many things.
Yeah. And bubbles.
Lots of things. I will say, though, if you keep whipping whipped cream more and more before you add any sugar or anything, the fat globules will keep finding each other more and more, and the bubbles will either collapse or they'll be somewhat suspended in the suspension that is butter.
Got it. Okay.
So that's why I say whipped cream is like a transient state, because it's not really solid and it's not made to last indefinitely. It needs these like special conditions to form and stay formed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go too far, then boom, it's butter. And if you don't go far enough, then it's just kind of like airy liquid.
Right.
It's not quite reached that stabilized foam yet. Like people say like the stiff peaks, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. So, yeah,
that's what I learned.
Dang, that's cool.
Yeah. Do you want to take a stab at saying it back to me? I mean, there's not like a specific chemistry lesson. It's more like part two from last week's chemistry lessons.
But it's helpful too, because like I liked that so many things were similar.
Because
it also helps me remember and keep fresh some of what we talked about last week. But so basically we talked about that on going from cream to butter requires helping break up the fat globules, allow more fat to find each other. And there's still going to be some of the like other liquid, like the water and stuff like that, and involved in that. And the protein helps them stay together in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get butter, we still have some of that in there, but we've allowed more and more fat to find each other and form into a solidified, you know, more solidified thing.
Yeah.
And what we're kind of doing with whipped cream is stopping in the middle there in a crucial point where some of the globules have been able to be broken up and some of the fat has been able to find each other enough to have a structure that's good enough to hold bubbles and be connected to each other kind of loosely without being a huge clump, a huge group.
Yeah.
So just enough where it can still, like air can still be trapped in there and it not just fall in on itself. And the protein still is allowing sort of fat and water to interact and all the other stuff that's in there, sugar and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if you get it in the sweet spot, then it's in this perfect scenario where it's not too liquidy.
Yeah.
Like it was just cream. And not too buttery either, as in the sweet spot where it can suspend a bunch of not suspend in the chemistry sense, but like can hold a bunch of air bubbles.
I think that's suspend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought suspension was like another term you've used about like dissolving things, but not
maybe.
Anyway, not a rabbit trail I was trying to go down, but create a structure that holds all that air in there.
Yeah.
And has a big fluffy, takes a lot more space and can do that without falling in on itself.
Yeah.
And without being liquid and without being butter.
If you think about it, it's so complicated because it's like, is this a fluid? Like, is this a liquid or is this a solid? It's more on the liquid side, you know, and it has a underlying structure that it's like, this isn't a solid, but it has a underlying structure that usually liquids don't have.
Right.
And so it is this like weird transition between solid and liquid that we're able to temporarily freeze and eat. And it's delicious.
Yeah. It is delicious. And there's something so pleasing about it being between states like that.
Yeah.
It's like, I think often a lot of us do chase something that's sort of novel or whatever. And it's like, whoa, this is different. So it's no surprise to me that somebody who discovered this at one point was like, hey, this is cool. Let's find a use for like this, not quite butter, but not liquid anymore.
Yeah.
Substance.
Let's add sugar to it.
Yeah. But it's like, it's the foaminess is just kind of pleasing.
Yeah, it is pleasing.
But, which is weird, but it is.
There was even a scientific paper where it said it's a extremely pleasing texture, I think is the phrase. It was really funny. I was working with a friend of mine and I was preparing this and I was like, I'm going to read you this sentence. And it was this big jargony sentence and all it meant was, if you whip dairy products, oftentimes you can incorporate air and it will be stabilized. But it was like so...
like it's a roundabout way of saying it.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, y'all need to get over yourselves and just write it in normal language.
Also, I love that... say the phrase again. Pleasing.
Extremely pleasing texture, yeah. I think.
I love that because you can't really prove that.
Nope.
Because you could prove that it is pleasing to... a specific
some people.
Individual, yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that it's like you can talk about the novelness of something.
Yeah. I wonder if I could find it again. Unique,
but like you really can't go quite so far as to say it is the texture is pleasing. You know? You can say the texture is.
Well, I don't think they referenced it. I think they said that it was a pleasing or satisfying or something texture, but there's no reference. Like we're trying to prove it.
Right. Yeah.
We're just stating it and assuming nobody's going to fight us on this. I also wonder if they have to use more of the like somewhat fancy language to be taken seriously as dairy scientists. Like I wonder, maybe not. Maybe dairy science is like a whole field that I just haven't really been exposed to. And I mean, I was thinking about how complex all the different interfaces are and how much there's still to learn.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who knows? I was like, just speak in plain language, please.
Seriously.
So that we don't have to translate this into layman's terms.
Right. It's like you guys are being so serious. You're really lacking in normal everyday speak, you know?
No, that wasn't a good joke. I won't laugh at that. You can laugh for the both of us. Okay, well, that's it. That's all I have for us this week. Do you have anything fun that you'd like to share about what happened in your week?
Yes, this is a one I've been meaning to share, and I think I forgot a couple of times that it's like not that cool, but it's something I was like, this is funny and interesting, and it might be something that other people would be interested in too, but over the past few weeks at some point was recommended on YouTube to watch a video from a British show that I feel like I'd heard about at some point, but like couldn't really remember where or when. But the show is called Taskmaster. Have you heard of the show?
Oh, I think Mason likes that show.
Yeah. I think Mason and I get recommended some similar stuff sometimes.
Yeah, I think so.
The algorithms are similar. But it is this very ridiculous show, and I've watched many clips now at this point, where the premise is simply that like there's this sort of character who is the taskmaster who like gives somewhat ridiculous tasks to the people who are competing on the show, and they're all comedians.
Did Rhett and Link play this game?
I have no idea.
I think they might have. I think that's maybe where I heard it.
But I think it started in like the late 2000s or something like that, and a comedian started it, and then he always has comedians be on it.
Yeah.
And so the task will be one of them. It was so great. So they're all competing individually and filming individually their attempts. And then they show them all later.
Rhett and Link have been doing this.
The taskmaster has to decide who did it best or worst or whatever. And give points accordingly. One of them was like they all arrive and they had just an envelope that's sealed and they open it and they just have to do what the task says.
Yes.
But they can't get any other information other than what's on the task.
Yes.
And one of them just, oh, they open it and it says, get goosebumps. Fastest wins. So they had to just find a way to get goosebumps.
I would have like Googled or tried to find a goosebumps book.
Yes.
But I guess that would have taken a long time.
Someone did that. They got a goosebumps book. How? They were like, they went to the library real quick, something like that.
Real quick.
But they thought like,
did they lose? Because other people just got goosebumps on their arm.
Well, some people kept trying things for like an hour and couldn't like make them get goosebumps.
Yeah, because it's an involuntary reaction. Yeah.
Another one was that I just watched was, you know, sneeze, whoever sneezes fastest wins. And it's like, that's another one. It's like, you could kind of make yourself do it, but it's pretty unpleasant.
It is unpleasant.
Or there's things like build a bridge that can support a potato with these objects. Just a lot of random things. And I've been getting so much joy and so many clips on YouTube. So if you're someone who wants a little bit of, you know, British humor in your day and likes watching comedians have to do dumb things and stuff, then this show may be something that you enjoy.
Or you can watch the Rhett and Link version. There's only two episodes, I think, where they did it, but they were also hilarious.
I need to watch that. I had no idea. I like Rhett and Link. So I had no idea these two things overlap.
It's not called Rhett and Link. You could watch the Good Mythical Morning episode.
Right.
I don't know. I only call them Rhett and Link.
So that is the, you know, weird little thing that's been happening in my life lately.
That's good.
What about you?
This is a really dumb one. I was like, there's so much good stuff that's happening in my life lately. I'm really enjoying kickboxing. I'm starting this like fitness challenge where it's like, oh, if you get steps, you get points. If you eat enough protein, if you eat like, you know, enough vegetables, whatever. So that's fun. I like to gamify everyday life activities. So that's like a fun thing.
Nice.
But the thing that I was like, oh, this has made me really excited. And every single person I've seen, I've told them about it right away. Is I bought some shoes. And listen, I know you don't care a ton about material things, but
I mean, I probably am just picky about which material things I care about.
Well, but and that's why I think you'll appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm definitely not what's the word? Completely.
You're not trying to buy all the shoes.
I'm not untethered from material reality.
Right, of course.
Yet.
So I got shoes for my wedding and I don't know if my feet have widened maybe because I've like gained weight or something. But also I think part of this because I buy shoes online a lot and I wore them for my whole wedding day, but I have not been able to wear them since.
Yeah.
They just hurt my feet.
Oof.
And so I don't have any really nice shoes. And so our friend Andrea was wearing these like, you know, they're Tom's brands, but they're like wedges. So they looked nicer. I was like, those look comfy. I'll go get them. So I went to a shoe store nearby here and they were cutting into my ankle. And I was like, what is wrong with me that shoes, like the literal comfiest shoes don't fit or don't feel good? And so I tried on all these shoes and none of them felt good. I sent a picture of one that felt good, but looked like very grandma-y to our friend. And she was like, yeah, you can't buy those. You're not a grandma yet. I was like, dang it. So then I was about to give up because I had to go to kickboxing. And as I was walking out, I saw these shoes that they're yellow, which I really like yellow shoes. If you're watching the YouTube, I'm wearing yellow shoes now. I like a pop of color in my shoe.
Yeah.
And they look like they would be very uncomfortable because they're like platform heels. And I like, you know, wedges that are kind of flat. But I was like, I've tried on 100 other pairs of shoes. I might as well try these on. And they were the only ones other than the grandma shoes that didn't hurt my feet.
Wow.
And they're so cute. And Mason doesn't know what they look like yet. I'm going to surprise him on a date that we have this weekend. And I'm so excited. And yeah, I just thought it's kind of a small victory. But sorry, for people on YouTube, I guess you can see me. I waved because Jam's wife walked across the window. But it's kind of a small victory, but to find shoes that fit and feel good. And I wore them around this morning while I was getting ready to make sure that they really would work for a whole date night.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
That's great.
They were so comfy. And I think it's because I've been buying my shoes online. I think I forgot during COVID that you should go places and try on shoes.
Yeah. And then once you figure that out, you could order that same shoe somewhere else if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And you kind of know, oh, this is the shoe that works great for me. Yes. This is the size that works, whatever. But yeah, the discovery part The testing out part is so hard to do.
Because the shoes that I've loved that have lasted a long time and been high quality, I've ordered high quality shoes, but they just don't quite fit right.
Yep.
But I take it from other people. They're like, oh, this fits my feet great.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Try on shoes. Yeah. Especially if you have a wider foot like me. It was so great. And those, the first pair should have been really comfortable. They looked really comfortable. The sole was really comfortable. It was just, it cut weird into my heel.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I was really, really excited. There's lots of good things happening in my life right now, but it's just, that's been one thing that I want to tell everyone.
Yeah.
I'm like, I found these shoes. They're so cute. And I can't wait to wear them and surprise Mason with them.
And they actually fit and feel good.
They fit and they feel good.
That's good.
Because I won't wear them if they don't fit and feel good.
Yeah. I had the opposite problem a few years ago where I finally discovered that my feet are really narrow and I just had no idea. But then if I look at my feet, I'm like, duh, I just didn't know. Yeah. And I don't really like think, I mean, it's not the kind of thing you can think about comparing to other people because also people have bigger feet than me. All feet are different.
Yeah.
It just never really occurred to me that I'm like, oh yeah, my feet are narrow and weird. And
everybody's feet are different. So you just.
Yeah. But it's to a point where it matters about which shoes I get and stuff. And it just took me forever to realize it. And now it's helped. It's kind of unlocked some stuff. But still. Yeah. It's like, yeah, the trying on stuff or the getting the wrong shoes and having to figure out the hard way has happened to me a bunch of times where I'll have to tighten them a lot.
Yeah.
Because of my little
flipper
feet.
This part right here, like the box right before your toes, I guess, is that called toe box? That part is wide. And I like on Sperry's and stuff, like that part would kind of bow out. But I think maybe with gaining weight and maybe with COVID, my tolerance for not being comfortable went down. And so like shoes that I used to wear and think were comfortable, they're not comfortable now. Like I had a pair of Chacos for a really long time that it was like one summer I could wear them and the next summer they hurt my feet.
Dang it. That's annoying.
So, you know, I don't know.
Yep.
But I found them and I guess I can post a picture of them online if y'all want.
Can you say, or should we not say the brand, or do we care? Does it matter?
I don't even know the brand.
Oh.
Is it like Mark Anthony or something like that? I don't know. It's not a brand I've heard of before, but they seem to be high quality. They're at a place where most are high quality. So.
Nice. Cool.
And they seem like they'll last a long time, and I'm so excited. And it's the first time I've bought new shoes, well, like since my wedding for heels, but even before that, I got them as hand-me-downs from friends.
Oh, yeah.
So I think it's the first time I've bought new, nice heels other than my wedding in like 5 years.
Yeah. Dang, that's awesome.
I'm really excited about them. It's a big win for me.
It's the simple things like that that are essential though, because we have to wear shoes every day.
So we have to wear shoes. And sometimes you're expected to look a certain level of nice in your shoes. And I just haven't had that option.
Yep.
I did wear Tevas with a dress to a wedding recently.
Nice.
And I was really comfortable, but it was not the most stylish option.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. That was my lesson for today and my happy thing for this week. And I'm really thankful to our listeners who wrote in with those questions and the mystery person who asked about whipped cream and to you for letting me come and teach you about whipped cream.
And thank you for teaching us. And like Melissa said, thank you guys for the ideas. The best episode ideas come from you guys. Like how does cream become butter? Where does whipped cream come from? How does it make that? All that kind of stuff. So if you have a question or idea, something you think might be chemistry, please don't hesitate to reach out to us on our website at chemforyourlife.com. That's chem, F-O-R, yourlife.com to share your thoughts and ideas. If you'd like to help us keep our show going and contribute to cover the cost of making it, go to patreon.com/chemforyourlife or type the link in our show notes or the description to join our super cool community of patrons. If you're not able to do that, you can still help us by subscribing on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube and rating and writing a review on Apple Podcasts. That also helps us to share chemistry with even more people.
This episode was made possible. This episode of Chemistry for Your Life was created by Melissa Collini and Jam Robinson, and Jam Robinson is our producer. This episode was made possible by our financial supporters over on Patreon. It means so much to us that you want to help make chemistry accessible to even more people. And those supporters are Avishai B, Bree M, Brian K, Chris and Claire S, Chelsea B, Derek L, Emerson W, Hunter R, Jacob T, Christina G, Lynn S, Melissa P, Nicole C, Stephen B, Shadow, Suzanne S, Timothy P, and Venus R. Thank you again for everything you do to make Chemistry for Your Life happen. It means so much to us that you're willing to support us and make chemistry accessible to more people.
And if you'd like to learn more about today's chemistry lesson, check out the references for this episode in our show notes or in the description of the video.
Yay, chemistry!